hyperinflation the world has ever seen. At 8 o'clock this evening, Alan Little will be investigating the causes and consequences of those events in 1923 and their impact on German fiscal, economic and social policy ever since. The Great Inflation is at 8 o'clock. Comedy next this evening, after a look ahead to Saturday.
OK, stand by for a take, Victor Love. We're just rolling back the tape.
Remembering the maverick satirist, Victor Lewis Smith.
Victor completely freaked everybody out.
We were always pushing the envelope with what you could broadcast.
Oh, hello, is that Vatican Radio? His Holiness the Pope suggested that maybe I contact you to do a programme.
I'm Dom Jolly, and I'll be looking at the groundbreaking iconoclast's contribution to radio, TV and journalism.
You don't have to agree with this guy, but it's entertaining to spend time reading him.
The funny old world of Victor Lewis Smith.
Dangerous radio, that's your brief.
This Saturday night at 8 on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
Now on Radio 4, John Lloyd returns with Anna Tajinsky to the Museum of Curiosity for an episode full of discovery, deception and a very frustrated bee.
The Museum of Curiosity.
Hello, my name's John Lloyd, and I'm the Professor of Ignorance at Solent University in Southampton. Welcome to the Museum of Curiosity, otherwise known as the Mausoleum for Cats. And here is our killer curator, Anna Tashinsky.
Hi, John.
Hello.
Just want to clarify that no cats were harmed in the making of this show. I do all my cat killing in non-working hours.
Well, now that we're locked and loaded, let's meet today's steering committee. Ex-police officer and comedian Alfie Moore, materials physicist and children's author Dr. Jessica Wade, and political journalist and cold swimmer Isabel Hardman. Hello.
Hello.
Alfie, so you're a former police officer, but now a comedian, of course. Do you think, as a former police officer, your fellow comics ever get a bit nervous around you?
Well, I do hope not. When I was new to the circuit, I was offered a joint in the green room to comedy club by a fellow comedian, and I was still a cop at the time, which was a nice gesture on the one hand, very generous, but I politely declined.
Jess, you've written a children's book on the science of the very, very small. Are very, very small children interested in science?
Yeah, I reckon everyone's interested in science. I think that little kids and grown-up kids and grown-up adults do an awful lot of science every day. I think I probably started kind of making potions and things in a bath or doing things in the kitchen. And I reckon that excitement and curiosity only gets beaten out of you as a teenager. So we really need to keep that kind of enthusiasm and excitement alive because the world critically needs scientists right now.
Yeah. So Isabel, you also have many strings to your bow, but two of them are being a runner and a political journalist. So you meet people who run for pleasure and people who run for office. Which of the two do you think are more fun to hang out with?
I mean, I think pleasure is a very wide term in the context of marathon running. But to compare runners and politicians, I think there are probably a lot of people in both groups who think they are way more impressive than they actually are.
So, but coming to you first, Alfie, after over 20 years in the Humberside Police, you quit to do stand-up comedy and have since appeared all over radio and television, from Comic Relief to the Today programme, including 7 series of your own show, It's a Fair Cop, here on Radio 4. And very good it is too, I may say.
Thank you.
But I'm curious, when you were in the police, what did you specialise in and did you enjoy the job?
Well, I love being a cop. I absolutely love being a cop. I wouldn't say I specialise in anything. That's because I'm a bit of a butterfly, really. And and that's a wonderful thing about policing, of course. If you're in a normal job and you get fed up with your normal day job, you tend to have to apply for a different job. But within policing, you can just switch specialisms. And if you're bored being a neighbourhood officer, you can just fill in an internal report and say, you know, I've had enough of this now. I'd like to go onto a response team or into CID or into the traffic. Oh, I've gone too far there. Nobody obviously wants to go into the traffic department. That's more of a punishment posting.
You know, when you read about, it's around about Christmas, you tend to get stories about really ridiculous call-outs throughout the year to the police. Have you ever got any really stupid reasons for someone calling you out?
A guy tried to report there's a bright light shining on the roof of his house, as bright as the moon, that turned out to be the moon.
Isabel, in politics, are we seeing an unprecedented level of law-breaking in the corridors of power at the moment, do you think? Or is it just that journalists have got better at uncovering it?
I mean, I think that my trade have always been excellent at uncovering things. But I think what has happened over the past few years is that politicians have got more used to lying, and we've had to, as a media, get more used to dealing with being lied to outright. So, you know, it's a bit like people always say that, you know, once you've lost your virginity, you want to have sex more, right? It's a bit like that. Once you've sort of lost your lying virginity, then it's quite easy to keep going.
Alfie, you're touring a show at the moment, aren't you? Fair Cop Unleashed, is that right?
That's right, yeah. I like to tell true stories, and that's a true story that happened in the 90s of the night a mysterious clown walked into Grimsby Police Station to report that he'd lost four lions. And I think he nearly got arrested for drunk and disorderly initially before a lion ran past the police station. So it's a story of that wild night in Grimsby in the 90s.
Good fun. Thank you, Alfie. I'm sure your gain is Law and Order's loss, but your comedy is still very arresting. Coming to you now, Jessica, you're a research fellow in physics at Imperial College London. You've won numerous awards for your work, including a British Empire Medal for services to gender diversity in science. You've recently discovered how to template chiral materials at functional interfaces, paving the way towards tunable chiroptical technologies. But you've also written a book that can be understood by small children. You spend a lot of your time outside the lab writing literally thousands of entries for forgotten and underrepresented scientists on Wikipedia. That is an amazing thing to have done. So who's one we should all know about?
It's so hard. I started in 2018 and I've written one every single day since January the 1st, 2018. So, get a hobby, Jess. I think by far the best kind of story about writing these Wikipedia pages is a fantastic mathematician called Gladys West. She lives in Virginia. She was born in 1930s in Virginia. She studied maths at a historically black college and university. She worked as a maths teacher for a bit, but then ended up working for the Navy and then the US government on the maths behind GPS. So she did the mathematical calculations that enabled things like SatNav to work.
Because
she managed to work out how to model the surface of the Earth, given that it's not a perfect sphere. And I wrote her Wikipedia page. It's kind of grown since I wrote it in February 2018. By May that year, the BBC had put her in their top 100 women in the world. And then you can see how many people are looking at her page every single hour, which is just so thrilling. You know, finally, this story is getting the kind of credit and she's getting the recognition she deserves. And then she's since been inducted to the US Air Force Hall of Fame. She's won a big shiny medal from the Royal Academy of Engineering, which had never before gone to a woman. And all these incredible things are happening to this 91-year-old mathematician.
Wow.
And I just love it. And then I got
That's
to Zoom
such
her.
A great story.
I got to do a Zoom with Gladys West. For me, it was the best thing in the world. She was just so cool. So yeah.
That's such testament to how the reason that we've heard of people is not necessarily because of what they've achieved. It is just genuinely how much people have put their names out there. And as soon as you put a name out there, then everyone picks up on it. I mean, I think, Isabel, you're writing a book on the NHS, and
yes.
I believe you learned about quite a lot of historically underappreciated figures while writing that. Was there anyone that stood out for you?
Yeah, and I mean, it's amazing, isn't it, that all of them are women. Edith Summerskill was a Labour MP. She was also a doctor in the 1930s and 40s. Very unusual time for a woman to be a politician. It was at the time when the female members' room was so small that they couldn't all fit in there at once. And it had like an ironing board and a sink in it. But she was an incredible woman. She was one of the early campaigners for the NHS. She also did a huge amount of work on pain relief for women in labour. She didn't think that women should just have to grin and bear giving birth, and really believed in using science. So she was very keen on the use of gas and air on labour.
Another connection there then is another Edith Smith, who was a midwife, but became the first woman police officer in Grantham in 1915.
Wow.
Really?
What was messier?
Yeah. What was messier?
Yeah. Jess, do Wikipedia ever reject your articles? Because it's quite difficult. You can't just put one up, can you?
Definitely out of the, you know, I've written over 1,800 now. And out of that, a few have been deleted. Almost all of them have been recreated. But often it's because actually it's harder to prove that women are notable than men. You know, to be on Wikipedia, you have to fulfill certain notability criteria. It's a general interest encyclopedia. And because journalists and broadcasters and television shows aren't as good at covering stories about women or by women, it's harder to prove they're notable. So it's kind of this cyclical thing. So sometimes I have to be a little bit strategic. And if there's a really fantastic woman scientist or scientist of color or whatever who is going to have a hard time getting through notability, then I have to nominate them for prizes or get people to write articles about them. And that's also not allowed by Wikipedia. So sometimes it's harder to prove they're notable, but it's never because they're not notable.
Yeah, that's so wonderful. Interesting. There you go. Get Isabel on side. She'll write a piece in The Spectator every week about an unheard of female scientist.
But, well, thank you, Jess, for your work as a scientist in making all our lives easier, and as a tireless Wikipedian working to ensure that women in science will never be forgotten. Sorry, what was your name again? Now over to you, Isabel. You are the assistant editor of The Spectator and the presenter of Radio 4's The Week in Westminster. You're also an author, a prolific columnist and podcaster, and a popular guest on programmes like The Andrew Marr Show, Have I Got News For You, and Question Time. Now, if that sounds like a gilded life, in 2017 you were diagnosed with PTSD, but supported your recovery by going cold swimming and running the 2019 London Marathon. These experiences led to your book, The Natural Health Service. Tell us a little bit about the Natural Health Service.
I mean, I'm not one of those people who advocates just jumping into a lake and throwing away your antidepressants, but I'm still on a really strong dose of antidepressants. So despite all my outdoor activities, I still need the pharmaceutical industry to keep it going as well. And I'm not sort of suggesting what one MP thought my book was, which was hedgerow remedies. It's actually about exercising in the outdoors and the way in which seeing greens or even blue surroundings, the sort of patterns of woodlands, the sounds of birds and so on can help our brains to rest and to renew, can reduce our experience of pain. So there is a fair bit of research behind it, but as with all things mental health, there could be so much more that's rigorous. And so the book was my attempt to look at what research there was, to have a go at some of the things. So before I wrote the book, I wasn't a cold water swimmer, but I got addicted to it before it became cool. I was doing it years before Matt Hancock turned up with a photographer.
Oh no, does he do it?
Well, he turned up once with a photographer. It was just a weird coincidence. There happened to be a guy with a long lens when Matt Hancock decided randomly to go for a swim. I don't know how that happened.
Mysterious.
But I'm hoping that this means that I am actually a trendsetter, and that within a few years, having boasted about their cold water swims and taken lots of selfies, people are all going to take up bird watching, and they're just fascinated by this owl pellet they found on their walk, because that's another one of my hobbies.
How many have you got?
How many hobbies have I got, or birds?
What? How many owl pellets?
Well, I found one the other day and I was really excited because it meant that there's an owl near where I live, and it was a barn owl pellet. And so I keep going out for walks when it's getting dark, which probably makes my neighbours think I'm really strange.
My mum is a psychiatrist, Isabel, and everyone was very concerned at the beginning of lockdown about the impact that it would have on people's mental health. But then when people started going outside more and being a lot more connected to nature, they felt completely differently about themselves. So it was very hard to assess what the impact of the pandemic was doing, because people were just feeling so much better.
It's really interesting.
But Alfie, I imagine PTSD in the police is quite a common thing, isn't it? How do people deal with that? Is there a mechanism for looking after police officers?
There is now, yes. It's got a lot better in the last sort of, I guess, decade or so. When I first joined, you know, if you went to a horrible job, you went for a pint in the pub afterwards, really, and the DI had come and give you a pat on the back and that'd be it. And over the years, we've got much, much better at that. And now there are resources available, people on shift that have been trained. We're losing that stigma, aren't we?
But it's really hard because if, you know, everyone's talking more and more about mental health, and it's amazing that everyone's increasingly aware and asking for help, but we don't generate enough people to give the help.
No.
Yep.
Like the challenge isn't that people don't come forward to ask for mental health support, it's that there isn't enough mental health support. It's like the world's finally woken up to the challenges of having mental ill health, but not done enough to support the people who can improve it.
Yes. Yeah.
Said like the daughter of a psychiatrist.
I get really frustrated whenever politicians give speeches about mental health now, because they seem to think that they've done their job if they just tackle the stigma. And I mean, of all the people who've got the power to do a little bit more than tackle the stigma.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Isabel. In 2014, GQ magazine named you one of the 100 most connected women in Britain. And I very much regret it's taken us 9 long years to connect with you. Right, Anna, let's open the vault, please.
Certainly, Professor.
What, no password or anything?
Nope, it's our new open door policy, and we don't call it a vault anymore. It's actually a window of opportunity.
Right.
So, Alfie, what would you like to donate to the museum?
I'd like to offer the museum a CHIS, which is a covert human intelligence source, what was formerly known as an informant, or less politely, a stool pigeon, a snitch, a snout, rat, squealer, weasel, a narc.
And less flatteringly.
Yes.
And why is it that you want to give us one of these?
Well, no one likes a grass. I'm showing my Yorkshire now, aren't I? No one likes a grass except the police. We love them because informants are a very effective and cost-effective way of preventing and detecting crime. So that's the main reason.
And how much are they used? Because I suppose it's something that I think the public don't know very much about.
Yeah.
These are people who are just civilians, right? But who you recruit in the police because they're close to certain people that are useful or...
Yeah, not necessarily civilians. Could be anyone, really. And the other reason, I'm particularly like sort of ethical dilemmas around policing. And of course, an informant throws up all the ethical dilemmas you could ever wish for. They've been professionalised in recent years where there's a specific department and they all have to be registered now. But when I first joined, they weren't registered and ordinary street bobbies had their own informants. And we have to recruit them, of course. We used to call it talent spotting.
Brilliant.
Typically, you might have interviewed somebody and you might sort of get the feeling that they'd be the right type of informant, or sort of people come to us sometimes and say, you know, I want to be a CHIS, which is, of course, then you must concern yourself with their motivation. There's sort of an assessment process, like a bit like a job interview type.
I quite want to be a CHIS.
Oh, do you want to be a CHIS?
Yeah, it sounds really exciting.
Let me see yourself in 5 years. New identity on the Australian Gold Coast, please.
Yeah, we had a lot of agents and informants in World War II, of course, vital. Did you know that pigeons were agents for the British? And in fact, I think we dropped pigeons over occupied France in boxes with parachutes that carried envelopes that contained questionnaires. So we'd drop the pigeons, they'd parachute down to the ground, and then we'd hope that they'd land in the house of some friendly person and they'd have a questionnaire saying, by the way, how's it going there? Are the Nazis doing anything we should know about? Could you give us any information you have? And people would.
I wonder if the other pigeons knew that they were covert pigeons, you know, acting like regular pigeons. What are you doing today, yeah, Derek? Are you going to come and sit on the statue with us? No, I've got something on today. I can't. Derek's acting strange, isn't he?
So, Isabel, have you ever grassed anyone up? And if so, why?
No, probably my brothers when I was younger, but no, it's when you're a journalist, you have to really hold on to your sources. And I mean, you often get kind of these fishing expeditions by other MPs who want to work out how you got some information. And most of them are pretty sort of amateur attempts. I mean, my favourite one was when Tory backbenchers were telling me what was going on in private meetings, and then an email went round saying, do not pass this on, especially not to Isabel Hardman. which obviously then passed on to me. That was a nice moment.
Sort of the opposite to a chiss, yeah, a covert. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Alfie, for donating your chiss. But what do you think is the best way to display one?
I guess by the very nature of the beast, they can't be on display with a label on them, because they there wouldn't be a chiss anymore. So I would say they have to be in place covertly, maybe as one of the staff employ them secretly, and they can keep an eye on things.
Excellent.
Well, thanks, Alfie, for your donation of a chiss. We'll make sure they're kept well undercover but rotated when no one is looking, so the grass is always greener on the underside.
Jess, what exhibit would you like to donate to the museum?
I would like to donate to the museum a Raman spectrometer. So this is my favourite kind of scientific instrument. Basically, what happens is we shine a laser on a molecule or a material, and we make all of the chemical bonds in that material start to vibrate. And we look at the light that's scattered from those bonds vibrating. And from that, we can tell exactly what's inside that material. In my science, I use this kind of machine to make more efficient solar panels or make brighter LEDs. But we could use it to look at pigments in ancient art. You can use it to understand shells. You can use it to look for life on Mars.
There is one on Mars, isn't there? There's actually one on Mars now.
There is exactly one on Mars. It's on a component of this mission called Sherlock, which is out there collecting trace signs of organic life and trying to work out the Raman spectrum of those and then sending the information back to us on planet Earth. But yeah, it's a really quite remarkable feat of engineering to get one of these instruments on Mars, and they've managed to do it.
For the listeners who don't know, Sherlock's actually an acronym.
Of course.
For Scanning Habitable Environments with Raman and Luminescence for Organics and Chemicals. And he has an assistant called Watson, apparently. But do you know what Watson stands for?
So Watson's Sherlock's little camera. I think that the acronyms precede what the definition of the acronym is. People are more excited to try and work out the words to fit into it. But it's Wide Angle Topographic Sensor for Operations Engineering.
Just beat me to it.
So Alfie, spectroscopy is essentially shining a light on something and analysing what comes out. So basically your old job, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
So these spectrometers can analyse blood, ink, or all sorts of illegal substances. Would that be useful for a bobby to have on the beat?
Yeah. If we could pull a handheld device off the old utility belt and do that, that would be... That'd be brillo.
It would be super cool, right?
Yeah.
You could tell exactly what a drug was or what was inside a liquid.
Yeah, again. I remember having a course on identifying cannabis was a course. And you used to have to be authorised to identify cannabis. So if you got a young man stopped in the street, you'd say, can I have a cannabis officer here? I turned up once and there was a kid with a little sort of brown residus, and he thought it was cannabis and it was a stock cube somebody had sold him.
So Jess, that sounds like an excellent thing to donate. We would love to display the Raman spectrometer. And how do you think we should display it?
In a way that everyone can use it. One of the best Raman experiments that we did with good taxpayers' money was trying to work out the colour of jelly babies in the dark, because they all have very distinct Raman spectra. So I'd actively encourage free and open Raman exploration in the museum.
Excellent.
Oh, that's brilliant, Jess. And so thank you for your donation of a Raman spectrometer. I plan to use it on my comedy material to find out if it's gold.
So Isabel, what would you like to give to the museum today?
I would like to donate a bee orchid, Ophrys apifera.
Lovely. And what's so special about the bee orchid?
Well, bee orchids are part of a genus of orchids that have evolved to mimic certain insects. And the way they do this is not just by looking like the bee or wasp that they're trying to mimic, but also that they're furry. So if you actually look at one closely, it has a furry lip to it, which is amazing. You can sort of stroke it. They also smell like a beautiful female virgin bee. Obviously, we can't smell that. I have no idea what a virgin bee smells like. To a male, and the males emerge earlier in the season than the females. they have hit the jackpot. It's time for a good time on this flower. They land on this flower and they think they're having their best night ever. After a while, they think, well, this, she's not enjoying it. So they move on. And they go to another fan. They're like, oh, my goodness, here's another lady. And get Piggy on the other bee orchid. And obviously, in the process, they transfer the pollen from flower to flower. And
so clever.
Humans, we're fascinated by orchids. It's one of the biggest plant families. But within the orchid families, and, you know, you've got so many weird-looking ones. There's one that looks like a flying duck. And I love their natural deception. I love the fact that you can come across some in some random places and that there's this treasure at your feet. But I think one of the things, as someone who's, you know, had quite bad mental health problems, I was on sick leave for a long time, and I had to find something to do, because actually being mentally ill is really boring. And for me, the hunt is as satisfying as actually finding the plants, because you go into this sort of meditative state where you can't focus on all the mad things in your mind because you're so busy looking for these small plants.
Mm, that's really
massive
good.
Dopamine hit when you find the orchid, mm-hmm. when it sort of emerges from the grassland like a magic eye picture.
Do you know, I was going to ask, this might sound like a really daft question, but are they protected at all? You know, because from what you've said, I mean, imagine just somebody coming up and cutting them and taking them on for a minute of ours. Yeah.
There are some, like the lady slipper orchid.
Yes, that gets a lot of attention, doesn't it? It's like the celebrity orchid that gets its own police guards.
Yeah,
and stuff.
It's got a warden, a 24-hour warden, and sort of tripwire.
Alfie's like, I know that one. I know that one. Yeah. We're deployed for them a lot.
The secretive orchids that that people try and steal. I mean, there's a lot
of prestigious in the Royal Protection Team, that one. I'm on the orchid protection team today.
OPT.
Yeah, the OPT.
So, Jess, the Raman spectrometer, would that be able to tell the difference between the business end of a bee orchid and an actual bee?
I mean, it would tell you if you had the pigment in the orchid that would be different to a bee. But you could look at, and Isabel will know this more than I do, but I think that orchids, they attract insects and bumblebees by reflecting really interesting patterns that bumblebees can see. And insects can see ultraviolet light. And so they have certain reflective structures on the petals of leaves that reflect really beautiful kind of nectar guides.
Wow.
And I think you could use that to tell that you were looking at a plant and not a bee.
Could you point the spectrometer at the bee? Would it tell you how many times it's tried to have sex, the poor thing, with a flower that day?
Yeah, yeah, 100%. You just get a little reading out.
Just a little sad face. Little bee with a little sad face. What a day this has been.
All right, well, I think we'd love to accept a bee orchid then. But once we've accepted it, how would you like us to display it, Isabel?
I would like you to display it on the museum lawns. And you could have a little sign at the edge of the lawn saying there are bee orchids in this lawn, but we're not going to tell you where. Because for me, looking for and finding these flowers is part of the joy.
That's a brilliant idea.
Can I just say, excuse me, sorry, I know this is very unusual, but can I change my donation to a dating website for single bees?
Isn't that one already? Is that what Bumble is?
Well, thank you, Isabel, for your bee orchid. If it looks like a bee and smells like a bee, it probably isn't a duck orchid, which, as you mentioned, there really is such a thing. So there we have it. The museum's collection now includes a covert human intelligence source, or CHIS, an Ophrys apifera, and a Raman spectrometer, two masters of deception and a master detector. I'd like to thank Alfie, Jessica, and Isabel, and leave you with this from American composer Virgil Thompson. Whatever deceptions life may have in store for you, music is not going to let you down. That's all from the museum this time. Goodbye.
The Museum of Curiosity was curated by John Lloyd and me, Anna Tuschinski. The donors were Isabel Hardman, Alfie Moore, and Dr. Jessica Wade. The exhibits were catalogued by Mike Turner, Mandy Fenton, Jade Gebby, Cameron Loxdale, and Lydia Meisen. The producers were Sam Holmes and Li Ying Li. And it was a BBC Studios production for Radio 4.
This weekend, Six Music Festival heads to Greater Manchester with incredible live music from artists like Christine and the Queens. get you into the spirit, check out the Back to Back Sounds, featuring Rave Forever, The Morning After Mix.
Where are we now? Where are we now?
And Indie Forever. Find the Six Music Festival Back to Back Sounds on the Music tab, only on BBC Sounds.